Welcome to the Exceptionally Irresistible Show, featuring conversations with people who have demonstrated exceptional success in their lives and who have some irresistible qualities worth learning from. Come learn how others have created an exceptionally irresistible life. You too can live an extraordinary life, both personally and professionally. So sit back, relax, grab your favorite beverage, and enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another We'll start over again. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Exceptionally Irresistible Show. We are super excited, and once again, thank you so much for continuously showing up, listening, sharing, and all of your involvement. This is what it's all about. It's about you, the listeners, the audience members. It's all about bringing you this exceptionally irresistible stories and, you know, discussions and stuff like that. And I hope you are really getting the value out of it at the end of the day. Today, we have someone who truly demonstrates exceptionally irresistible in the sense of this is not just any educator. Right? How often do we know educators who are, you know, teachers, principals, assistant principals, all those kind of people? They are key people in our growth, in our development. This one in particular is someone who truly, truly, truly cares. Have you ever had that one teacher or that one educator who was there for you? This one really demonstrates that by spades and by miles. Without further ado, Brenda Yoho.
Thanks, Jeremy. That's a very heart-touching and warm welcome. Thank you.
Absolutely. Brenda, I mean, from the day I met you, you remind me of certain teachers who were like that for me. You know, there were really those teachers, not too many, unfortunately, and I wish there were more. That we're going to talk about you and I here, but there's, you know, really there, like there are teachers who really could change our life, you know? So
yeah,
that's absolutely what we're going to talk about here. So tell me a little bit more about, you know, the message about, you know, this is what we're talking here about, this special educator that you are. Share with us the message. If you were standing on a roof somewhere, you know, yelling it out, what would that message be?
You know, I've had this journey with kids, and I've been listening to kids who are adults now. So my message to everyone would be that building those relationships that we build in school are not just for that season. It's for a lifetime. I have kids that I still stay in contact with who are 32, 36, 39 years old. Wow. So it's a special relationship. And I take my job when I was an educator so seriously because parents trust us with their children, and they trust us to provide the best education and to help the kids feel good and to feel safe. And we're a partner with parents. So I believe in the home, school, and community working right together to really build all of those needs and support those needs of each child.
Yeah, I love that message. And I share that message with you. And let me ask you this one question. Do you sometimes find that parents come, drop off their kids at school, and just hope for the best and see you later, you know? Like, what are you seeing in terms of this partnership? When you're saying partnership, what are you seeing in terms of like the parent, the community, the school?
Sure. Yeah. You know, we're in a fast paced world. So our parents are really busy, and even more so busy now that I'm not in those schools. I'm retired now, but they're dropping the kids off and they're going off to work. And sometimes it's a second job. Sometimes they worked all night long and they came home long enough to get the kids off to school. So it's really hard to build those relationships, but we have to make the effort to do so. So what I mean by being a partner with our parents is that getting to know them, and getting to know who they are, getting to know who's at home and what's happening at home. Because sometimes, sometimes we often, you know, we'll have, you know, older kids will fall asleep in class or something else. Mm-hmm. That's because maybe they have a newborn sister at home, or maybe, maybe the grandmother just moved in, and, you know, there could be different things that are happening that are causing the kids. So it's up to us to try to figure out and to work out with the families on how we can help and support them. So I think it's a two-way street. How can they help us with getting to know their children better and to serve them better, but also how can we help them? Right. Because we can, I think.
Right. And one thing I like about your message, and I'm going to reference your book, which I have right here. We'll also talk about it. So a little bit of a plug here, you know, the two rules. I lead with two rules. I'm sorry. What I took out of this and what I really loved is that education is really all over. It's everywhere. It's ongoing. It's not something that begins and ends in school. It's just everywhere, you know. And if you don't mind just expanding a little bit more on that.
Yeah, it is everywhere. And I think that one of the things that I truly believe in is that the education journey for our children, education is something we do with children, not to them. And right. I feel like that in the past, we have been tied to, as the government provides us with a lot of funding, with that funding comes an attachment of certain things we have to be able to perform and do. And so that trickles down into the classroom where we feel like that we're under pressure to just meet those needs that the government is looking at and testing us on. But really, we need to comprehend that and really encompass that there's all parts that we need to address to help our children succeed in life. And one of the things I feel like it is building those skills that they need in order to progress in life and how they want to. Problem solving, decision making, social awareness, self-regulation, you know, those types of things to try to help them to be able to be successful as adults.
So how, let's ask this first, what are the two rules and how does that all play into what we're, our discussion here?
So the two rules are everyone is going to feel good and everyone's going to feel safe. And so I did that in a school setting. And so I'll just mimic what I did in a school setting. So basically on the very first day of school, I introduced that to the children and I explained it to them this way, that everybody who walks through the doors of our school is going to feel good about being here. So our job is to ask ourselves, before I say anything, before I do anything, how is this going to affect me? How's it going to affect others? We always have the kids stop to ask those questions. Before I say something, I need to ask, is this going to make me feel good? Is it going to make others feel good? We do the same thing with safety. You know, when you walk in the doors of the school, everybody's going to feel safe. Well, how do we do that? Well, before you say anything, is that going to make you feel safe? Is it going to make others feel safe? And, you know, we do that and we practice that. And so then it becomes a habit. When you consistently are doing that and you're asking those questions, then we can develop a habit that kids are automatically thinking that before they're acting and saying and doing. And one of the most important things I feel is that when we do that, we have to embrace the fact that we have them at the school setting for X amount of time, 8 hours a day. Right. And only, you know, 180 days a year, I think, is the number. You know, we want to not put our values into them. We just want to help them to understand how to problem solve. So if they're faced with a situation. So I often would tell them, if you look at the handbook and you look at all the rules that are there, read each one and think, is it helping me to feel good? Is it helping me to feel safe? Is it helping others feel good and others feel safe? And you can apply that to every single rule that we have. And once the kids can see that and they can understand that, then the next step is, now next to that is consequences. And consequences are forever in your life.
Sure.
Goals are things that you're going to have with every decision that you make. I focus on with the kids is this. Everybody has a choice. You can choose to be part of the problem or part of the solution. But when you choose, you're choosing the consequence. You are, not somebody else, not your mom, your dad, grandma, your friend, your brother, your sister. It's you making the choice. When you make that choice, you have to be responsible to that consequence, whether it be good or bad.
Sure.
You know, if I choose to go out and drive and speed, I'm taking a chance. I'm going to a ticket, but I'm also taking a chance I could hurt somebody.
Is there a difference between consequence and punishment according to this definition?
I think it is, because punishment is something that is just dealt out without having a conversation, without processing it. So I spent a lot of time, and my team did too, with talking with kids and with families. So when they would come to me in the office, if the teacher sent them out of the room, they came to me, I would sit them down and I would say, okay, tell me, did you ask your questions? And were you part of the problem or part of the solution? And I'd wait for them to process that. And I think that's important, because if we miss that big step, which is a huge step, and we just give them okay, you're suspended from school with no conversation, then we're not gonna have a way for those kids to see that it was wrong. They're just thinking they're getting punished. They didn't get a chance to talk about it. And I think that that's huge.
So it sounds to me, and based on this, I love your answer. This is what I'm getting from it. Consequence is something that is more proactive versus punishment sounds like something just passive. You know, here's your punishment, keep on going, moving on, I don't care, whatever. But consequences is almost the same thing like punishment, because, well, if you did something negative will come out. But it sounds more proactive. Here's what you did, and here's why this is the outcome, or whatever it is.
Yes, because it gives them a chance to really see and be accountable for their actions, and to understand, okay, yeah, that probably wasn't good. I should not have done that. And then once you start having those conversations, it reduces the amount of discipline issues you have in your school, because kids are taking time to think and really make better decisions and choices. And I think it's a great way to really do education, in my opinion. I like it. I think it does take a lot of time. It did take a lot of time, but I never had parents that really, they understood. And I had children who understood when they made a mistake. And kids, you know, sometimes you'll hear, oh, that school is really bad, you know. And I heard that about one of the schools I was transferred to. That school is horrible. Oh, you must have done something really bad to get assigned to that school, because they're just no good. And I thought, wow, I don't say that about kids. Kids make some poor choices sometimes, but who's helping them and who's guiding them? Sure. And helping them to learn how to make better choices. Sure. Because, you know, until they have those conversations and they learn all of these skills, then of course they're not going to be able to make good decisions, because they've not been able to talk about it and figure out what that looks like, what's that feel like.
Sure. So let's talk a second about, you know, results. Let's talk about outcomes. You know, this sounds amazing. This sounds good. You know, it feels good, definitely. But you said before that you're still in touch with some of your students now, you know, in their 30s, you know, approaching their 40s and stuff. What do you see as the results? Like this approach, what are you seeing as a result?
So I can go back. I'll tell you when I implemented this in the school that I was at, the school was not performing well and the culture was horrible. And that school turned around. We academically started making growth, and personally they were growing like crazy. The teachers had a better outlook. You know, one of the teachers that I talked with when doing the book was talking about how it was a family approach, that we were really looking out for each other, and we were. Mm-hmm. And that's a better environment. Sure. Now that the kids are coming back and talking to me, they're telling me how they're applying that stuff in their own lives.
Wow.
Some of them are parents. I have one, you know, that's getting ready to get married. He's been on the, he was the youngest person ever to get a seat on the council in his city. Wow. I have one that's in Washington, D.C. right now. I have some in the military. You know, it's amazing to hear them applying these things in their life and the choices that they're making. Now, you're not going to reach all of them. You're going to, you know, I want to reach every single one of them. I will never give up on any of them. I'm always their cheerleader, and they know that.
Yeah.
You know, but you're going to lose some. And I'll tell you the reason why I feel that you do is because if they're getting these habits developed in this environment that we create with doing this two rules philosophy, if they don't have that environment in other places, that's why I say homeschool and community, then they don't know how to apply it all the time. And that's why I feel so strongly about helping us all working together for the common good and realizing that this is what we need to do.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And you see, I'm coming more from the business world and stuff, and hearing there's so many similarities in the sense of the employer, the team. It goes without saying that the team needs to feel that good about working in their environment, and they do need to feel safe in that environment. Otherwise, they're not going to perform well. But here's the challenge. The challenge is that this sounds very, I don't know, weak to many people. It sounds, you know, feely, goodsy kind of thing. But then the way you're demonstrating it and the way you're explaining it, especially from a young age, these are skills that are not only going to help them in school, in life, and everything, but even in their professional career, even in every element of their career, because they're just wired to even look for this. Am I going to an environment which makes me feel not good or not safe? You know, it makes them wired to look out for themselves in that kind of way. And that's really setting them up for success from a very young age, if you're starting from a base educational level.
You're right, Yermi. You're so right. And I've had business people talk to me about that. And it is important for people to always feel good and feel safe where they are. You know, one of the things I have said is that the value that people have for themselves and what we do as leaders in a business setting or in a school setting, how do they know how I'm making them? I mean, I'm trying to make them feel valued, but am I? Are we asking ourselves questions? Are we asking the other people questions? Do you feel good about being here? Do you feel valued? You know, start asking more questions. And I love asking questions, because open-ended questions can give you lots of things. And the kids, I often did that with a lot of them. Well, majority of them, I would say, tell me more. I'm waiting. Tell me more. I didn't lecture at them, but I can tell you that one of the groups of kids, they got together in a group and they were sending messages back and forth, because one came and I had taken a picture and we shared it on Facebook. She did. And they were saying, I was nostalgic. They were like, oh, Mrs. Yoho, she's nostalgic. And that's when I finally felt old. I'm like, oh my gosh, I am really old. I'm nostalgic. Yeah. But he was repeating exactly the stuff that I said and did at the school. So he remembered, and I told him, I hope he remembered more, but he says, I can remember you going out in the gym. And there's 602 of them. And I asked the teachers to leave and nobody moves. Nobody does anything. Then finally, a couple of them, you know, leave. He says, I can remember that how you taught us that when your hand was in the air, that our eyes were on you and your mouths were closed because it was time for Mrs. Yoho to speak. And I said, absolutely, because we don't yell to start a conversation.
Right.
So they knew if I raised my hand that they needed to raise their hands to get everybody's attention to get quiet. So it was a great signal. And he can remember that.
Oh, wow. The small little things. Wow. Let me ask you one almost final question. We have one last question that we always end the show on, but one final question. You were saying a little bit earlier that some are going to relate to the message. Some are going to catch it. Some are not. Did you see any perhaps pattern, characteristics, types of kids or people? What were you finding that these catch on? These have a little bit of a harder time.
Support systems, mm-hmm. and who they're looking up to, and who they're surrounded by. Mm-hmm. I have one particular student in my mind, and I feel like that he got what I was saying because he mm-hmm. did. He listened to everything that I said.
Yeah.
But however, he couldn't apply it because of the pressures that he had around him and the lack of support he had. Mm. So when I had him in middle school, you know, he had a mistake that he made, and people will say it was a pretty big mistake, and it was. Mm-hmm. He had a gun. Mm. No. He gave that gun to somebody else, and then they shot that gun and hurt someone. Mm. Didn't kill them, but hurt someone. Mm. And we talked about that, him and I, you know, one-on-one, but he went to jail because of all of that. And he was angry when he came back from the detention center. And I talked with him and I said, we can't, when you respond, you're thinking, when you're reacting, you're using emotion. As you're reacting, you've got a lot of anger. We've got to switch that to responding. Mm. And I worked with him, but then he moved on to the high school. I moved to a different position in the district. Mm. All of my children have always had my cell phone. I've always had my number out there. Anytime they needed something, they could call me. Very rarely did anybody call me, but sometimes I can count on one hand the times that people have called me needing some help. Mm. He is one of them. And he was kicked out of his home at the age of 18. He had not completed high school. Mm-hmm. And he called me and he tracked me down at my office in the district office and said, I need help, Mrs. Joe. And I said, what do you need? Well, they won't believe me because I've moved somewhere. I'm living with my grandma. They won't change my bus so I can go to the alternative school. Mm-hmm. So I worked and got all that taken care of. I went and picked him up. I went and picked him up by myself and took him to the school. And people are like, well, you shouldn't do that. You know, he's a criminal. He's not a criminal because he did something. But he said to me, thank you, Mrs. Yoho, because you said and you say, and I believe you, you will never give up on me. I said, you're absolutely right. I won't. Yeah. But he was shot and killed at the age of 19. So I was wishing he would have called me like one more time. But, you know, those are the kids that we're losing, and it's because I'm going to go back to that equation: home, school, community. It has to be all three. We created all three of those, created the issues that we're seeing in society right now. So all three of us have to come together to find the solution.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So a little bit on a lighter note, where do you draw? I mean, that was tough. It's so important to say that. Let me backtrack for a quick second. It is really important because, you know, as well-wishing as we could be, as well-wishing as we, you know, there's only a level of control, quote-unquote, that we have. There's only so much we could do. And, you know, and really, you're right. It really is this bonding factor or this triangle, as I'm gathering from what you're sharing, is that it is important. It's not just the educator's job. It's not just the parent's job. It's not just the community. It's all together. And that support system is paramount. It's definitely, and that's across the board everywhere. Jobs, businesses, you know, life, like wherever it is, these three are critical. So I definitely share that with you. So it is important to mention. But then again, on a lighter note, Brenda, where you seem to be a very driven, passionate individual, where do you draw your inspiration from? Where do you feed yourself from?
So my past feeds me a little bit. And then I do have a lot of my faith base that helps me daily. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, I grew up, my brother and sister are 17 and 16 years older than me. So when I came along, it was a big surprise. I always mm-hmm. tell them I was a gift from God. But my parents did not know how to read or write. They were very they were uneducated. So when things would go home for me to share with my family, my mom and dad, it was different for me than it was other kids. But we kept mm-hmm. we kept that as a secret. But mm-hmm. But one year it came out. My third grade year, I experienced death for the first time. It's in the book. And it was devastating to me. And I was out of school for a while and I came back. I failed a math test and mm-hmm. I had to have my mom sign it, and she signed it, but wasn't right the first time. She didn't feel like it was good enough to show the teacher. And then we did it again. And like, Mom, you forgot to just let me go to school. Cause I had to walk to school. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, the teacher had lots of kids around her desk, so I just laid it on her desk. I was walking back to mine and she yelled out my name, and from there I just got worse. I mean, she got everybody involved in it, seemed. So everybody was looking at me and I was feeling horrible. But my sister, older sister, was able to come to the school when she called home, and it was a traumatic event. So I didn't feel good and I didn't feel safe. So that's where that started. Wow. Because after that, I felt like I couldn't trust anybody. So in my book, I talk about having a trusting adult. I feel like that's a key factor for all of our kids. They have to have somebody they can trust and look up to. And it needs to be in multiple places. It needs to be in the community. It needs to be in the home. It needs to be at school. And they need to have those resources. But from there, my life, I'm the first one to graduate college. Wow. In my family. So I did that three times, not once, three. I thought I had to do it three times. So, but then I've had some life experiences that have really helped me to drive to make things better for everybody else. So I've had Crohn's disease, Crohn's disease, which I'm in remission. I was struck by lightning indirectly. Whoa. And then I had breast cancer. Mm. And I also have been struck by a semi truck while riding in the back seats of the car. Mm. And my daughter was driving. My granddaughter was next to me, and my best friend was in the front seat. We were going shopping that day, and I got the blunt of the whole thing. My daughter had to be cut out of the car, but I can just, when I think about that day and listening to her, I can't imagine how she felt as a mother. Because she couldn't, her daughter wasn't making any noise at all.
Oh no.
And all she could see was blood from me. Oh, so no. she and I wasn't saying anything. I was knocked out. So she thought both of us were dead. And that was, I can't imagine what went through her mind. But I have a traumatic brain injury. And people tell you sometimes you can't do things. You can just keep working and working and working and trying. And I do have limitations, but I know what those are. Passion has always been to serve children.
Wow. Brenda, this is, and it's like, we have a lot of guests on the show, but drawing inspiration from hardships and challenges just to keep you going and to really making this world a better place. This is the kind of thing that, this is why you're here. This is why you're on the show. It's what makes you exceptionally irresistible. And you know, there's so many people I'm sure are learning some incredible lessons here. So just one more time, you know, the book is right here. I'm going to have the link in the show notes. Very highly encouraged. Go get the book. This has been an incredible episode. Once again, thank you, Brenda. And thank you to the audience for being here today. This wraps up another episode and we hope you enjoyed, and we would love to hear your feedback as always. And connect with Brenda. There's all of her information right here in the show notes. And again, don't forget to grab that book. Remember, you are also exceptionally irresistible and you have all what it takes. Get that support, get the help, get the guidance, whatever it is, you have it. And so that's today's message. Thanks again, Brenda, and see you all very, very soon. Bye-bye. That's it for this week's episode of The Exceptionally Irresistible Show. What has inspired you to take action in your life? Take action now. Take the first step, share it with a friend, or write it in a journal. Subscribe and share this episode, and remember, you too are exceptionally irresistible.